eulogies continue this week for Steve Jobs, whose vision of the computer as a media tool forever changed the way we look at creativity. We consider the Apple co-founder's legacy and look to other media visionaries for guidance in the latest edition of PW's Week Ahead. Welcome, everyone, to Beyond the Book, Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. My name is Chris Keneally, and every Friday morning, Andrew Albanese, features editor at Publishers Weekly, reviews the latest publishing industry news with me. Welcome again, Andrew.
Good to be here, Chris.
It's good to have you. On a somber note, though, we have to acknowledge the death of Steve Jobs earlier this week. And you have, I think, some interesting thoughts about his legacy.
Yeah, it's sad news this week, definitely. And, you know, first and foremost, condolences go out to the Jobs family, who lost more than a visionary. They lost a loved one this week. But you look at the public outpouring of emotion over Jobs' death, and I think it speaks to the fact that we just don't have that many great game-changing visionaries these days, and Steve Jobs was certainly that. His impact on media, you look at what he's done with music especially, has been tremendous. And it's going to be worth watching to see how his vision plays out for books in the coming years. I think it's also safe to say that all eyes are going to be on Apple to see how it moves forward without Jobs. But I think by all accounts, he's left a very good legacy at Apple. And he certainly, with his company motto, has challenged us all to think different. In a bit of Jobs-related publishing news, Simon & Schuster also announced yesterday that it's going to push up its forthcoming biography of Jobs by a month. So that book's going to now be available on October 24th, and it's number one on Amazon's bestseller list right now, thanks to pre-orders.
And you know, Andrew, I have to say that Steve Jobs really is such a figure that even among the most cynical of us, his death pause, you know, sort of gives us pause. I was speaking earlier today myself with a journalist here in Boston who could be accused from time to time of being heartless. And he admitted to me, though, that when he learned this morning that Jobs had died, he felt like he could cry about it. So it really is an especially moving moment in the history of this very fast-moving medium.
Sad news indeed.
Well, you've got some other visionaries in the issue coming up this week who also know about thinking different.
Yes. So, you know, PW readers will know that in 2009, best-selling author and Boing Boing blogger Cory Doctorow came up with a plan to self-publish a collection of short stories called With a Little Help. And he had some very innovative and some would say visionary schemes of his own. And he's been chronicling that whole effort as a PW contributing effort. And it's been really fascinating stuff. And I encourage readers who haven't been keeping up with it to go back and look at them on PW's website. They're all available because they've yielded some great insight into both publishing and self-publishing. So the With a Little Help collection that Cory published has now been out for about 9 months, and the action has begun to idle a little bit, just as normally happens with trade books. Cutting to the chase, I think it's worth noting that Cory's made double the amount that he's made off his previous two short story collections combined. But the self-publishing process has been a ton of work for him. So in Monday's installment of With a Little Help, Cory writes about an aspect of the market that he kind of overlooked at the start, and that's libraries. You know, he set up the collection to be sold directly to consumers and to give it away to consumers as an ebook. But as any publisher can tell you, library sales can be a significant chunk of any book's overall sales. And Cory writes about the process of getting the collection set up for sale to libraries.
Well, that's very interesting. And we you know, we've had Cory Doctorow on Beyond the Book. He's really an iconoclast, somebody who, you know, thinks so far ahead, he's not really worried about its impact on the business. He just wants to sort of see how things work. And that's that point about the way that publishing is now a technology business. It's in the business of innovation. And someone like Cory Doctorow is really leading the way.
That's true. And I think he didn't know exactly how he was going to lead the way when he started this project. I think it's been a lot more work than he bargained for. But it's all very interesting, and he's chronicled it all in the pages of PW.
Well, a terrific series, and one, as you say, worth looking at in its full extent if you haven't done so before. Also, this week, you have an interview with Jeff Jarvis, who has a book that is kind of going against our own intuition about our sense of privacy.
Yeah, and go figure, from a guy like Jeff Jarvis, right, who's he likes to be out there on the edge sometimes. Jeff is a great author, and is a great interview too. So I had a chance to visit with him at his office at the City University of New York, where he teaches entrepreneurial journalism. And we talked about his most recently published book just out last month called Public Parts, How Sharing in the Digital Age Improves the Way We Work and Live. And so the book explores like the new social networking phenomenon. And his key theme is that it's good to share, and we are sharing on an unprecedented scale. And where he sort of goes against the grain a little is that he notes that we have this obsession with privacy. And that's all well and good. He is certainly not anti-privacy, but he warns us in our zeal to sort of, you know, hold on to our privacy, not to lose sight of the benefits of publicness. So it's a great, rollicking interview, and we talk about a lot of things, including what sharing means for the media business. As you know, a few publishers are worried that people are sharing their content without paying for it. And we also talk about that, how sharing has become sort of equated with stealing in the digital age.
Right. Now, you're going to be heading off to Frankfurt soon and joining your colleague, Rachel, there. You'll tell us a bit about what's going to be in the news next week, you think, and a few other small things to make note of.
Yeah. Also, in Monday's issue, you know, Rachel and I head off on Sunday. We're there for the week in Frankfurt. In Monday's issue, Rachel has a piece on Kindles, where they're sold overseas, but more complicated, what ebooks are actually available on those Kindles and the rights issues that are involved there. Our editorial director Jim Milliot is doing an update on the books program at National Geographic, where they recently named a new general manager, and they've also seen really strong gains in their children's program. And we have a retailing page on Monday that takes a look at how Follett and Barnes & Noble and Nebraska Book are adapting their stores to the changing demands of college students. So that's Monday's issue.
Well, Andrew Albanese, features editor of Publishers Weekly, thanks for that news wrap-up, and I'd like to turn now to Rose Fox. Rose is a PW Reviews editor who blogs at Genreville, and she comes to us every week with some highlights from the reviews pages in the next edition of Publishers Weekly. Welcome to Beyond the Book, Rose.
Thank you, Chris. Good to be back.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. I enjoy this segment. I don't get to read as much as I like to, but I like to hear about what's being published. And I understand this week we have some books that should appeal to body and soul.
That is correct. In fiction, we highlight Mr. G, a novel about the creation, in which physicist Alan Lightman offers a touching, imaginative rendition of God's creation of the universe. Our mystery thriller section has side-by-side reviews of Bill James's next two Harper and Isles mysteries, which are being released by two different publishers. In science fiction, fantasy, and horror, we cover Fate's Edge by Ilona Andrews, the delightful third novel set in a no-man's land between our world and an alternate magical America. And in romance, we review She Can Run by Melinda Lee, a meticulously plotted romantic suspense novel that's one of the launch books for Amazon's new Montlake Romance imprint.
Well, you know, in the comics section, you've got something to tell us that put me in mind of a film that many of our listeners may have seen a few years back called Persepolis. It was an animated film, the autobiography of a young woman growing up in Iran against the backdrop of the revolution there. And in this week's comics section, there's a collection of web comics that sort of continues that story.
That's right. It's called Zara's Paradise by pseudonymous authors Amir and Khalil, who have to remain pseudonymous for political reasons because their comics are very critical of the current Iranian regime. And they focus on the lives of ordinary people, and by doing so, shine a spotlight on the current political issues in Iran.
Well, you know, I think there'll be a number of titles in the coming months and seasons that examine all the political turmoil there in the Middle East and throughout the Islamic world. Fascinating to see it, though, coming up in comics version as well. But you've got some interesting discussions with some critics and nonfiction writers as well.
That's right. In nonfiction, our Q&A this week is with music critic Grail Marcus, discussing his new appreciation of The Doors, which focuses on their music. And on the philosophical side, there's a glowing view of A Brief History of Thought by Luc Ferry, already a bestseller in France, which our reviewer calls scintillating and proof that philosophy belongs at the center of life. For those who like other things at the center of life, we review Catherine Arnold's The Sexual History of London, a substantial, engaging, and titillating look at 2,000 years of an English lust and vice. Our religion section covers Beyond Religion, in which His Holiness the Dalai Lama continues to make his case for the development of a universal secular ethics rooted in compassion. We also highlight Armies of Heaven, Jay Rubenstein's incisive and readable discussion of the myths and legends that drove the Crusades. And finally, in the children's section, there are reviews of 5 art activity books and 7 interactive concept books, both fiction and nonfiction. And in middle grade and young adult fiction, we review Legend by Marie Lu, a stunning dystopian series launch that our reviewer calls utterly satisfying in its own right.
Well, Rose Fox, PW blogger at Jean Reville, thank you so much for that review of the reviews.
You're very welcome.
And Andrew Albanese, features editor for PW. We'll be talking to you next week from Frankfurt. We look forward to that. We hope you have a great trip overseas and good luck keeping up with all the activity that goes on there. I understand that's a fatiguing experience to be at Frankfurt.
Oh, it is, especially in the beer halls.
Well, I think we could take it once or twice during the week. Andrew Albanese, thank you so much. Every week, CCC's Beyond the Book speaks with the editors and reporters of Publishers Weekly for an early look at the news that publishers, editors, authors, agents, and librarians will be talking about when they return to work on Monday. Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, like Beyond the Book on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, copyright.com/beyondthebook. Our engineer is Jeremy Briskey of Burst Marketing. My name is Chris Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.